from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. It's been 40 years since California voters passed a sweeping property tax measure called Proposition 13. It slashed taxes for homeowners and triggered a nationwide tax revolt. Critics say Prop 13 has hurt schools and distorted California's revenue stream while creating a disincentive to build housing. Supporters say it's a sacred cow with widespread benefits. We'll assess the impact of Prop 13 on homeowners, schools, and government, and discuss whether it's time to reform it. We'll get started right after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, in June of 1978, California voters passed Proposition 13, slashing property taxes for homeowners and capping annual increases to 2% a year. On election night, Prop 13 backer Howard Jarvis had this warning for government.
We, the taxpayers, have spoken. We have made clear our goals. Now, we are watching you. It is your responsibility to make Proposition 13 work by cutting the barrels of lard out of the government budget.
Prop 13 did pass overwhelmingly, and 40 years later, most Californians think Prop 13 has been mostly positive for the state. This hour, we're going to assess the long-term impact of Prop 13, whether it's time to think about reforming it. And we begin with California's nonpartisan legislative analyst, Mac Taylor, who joins us from our studio up in Sacramento. Mac Taylor, good to have you with us.
Nice to be with you.
Let's begin by asking you, from where you sit, how did Prop 13 change the taxation system in California?
Well, I don't think it's an understatement to say that it was a truly transformative measure with regard to state and local finance in the state. Prior to the passage of the measure, local governments were levying taxes at the rate of about 2.6% of the value of the property. So it was a reduction of about 60% in their local revenues. And it was also a restriction on the ability of many local governments, whether they were a special district, a community college district, a school district, to tax at whatever levels that they selected. So it not only reduced revenues to local governments, it also ended up changing the structure, the relationship between local governments and the state. Really, a lot of power moved up to the state to make decisions about state and local finance.
And we should say, just to give it some historical context, that in 1978, there was a big budget surplus, which the legislature and the governor, who was Jerry Brown, talked about maybe giving back to taxpayers in some form or another, but they were never able to agree. So there was this pot of money sitting there, and the economy was terrible, and there was a lot of inflation. Interest rates were very high, and so homeowners really took the brunt of property taxes in a way, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think there was cases in some counties where you had a very hot property markets, and so you would have annual reassessments of people's property taxes that were very high. And that made it difficult for many homeowners to adjust to those rapidly growing assessments and the accompanying tax increases that occurred. And so I think that's what was certainly attractive to many people, that this sort of 2% annual cap that you talked about, that they would have more certainty from year to year about what would happen to their property taxes.
And so is it fair to say that when Prop 13 passed, it was obviously a shock to the system, and the state, because of all that money they had, was able to sort of temporarily protect local governments and schools from some of those immediate impacts?
Yes, that's what happened. They used the bailout to provide grants to local governments. They took over some responsibilities. But it was a painful adjustment process, and it took many years. And in some ways, we're still dealing with the fallout from Prop 13.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you think about the state-local relationship, we've had lots of incidents where the state has what we call realigned some programs to local governments and then provided funding sources from them. But it really had triggered this decades-long sort of evolution in the system of the way that the state and local governments provide services. And there's still a lot of discussion about, well, what services should be provided at the state level, at the local level. But clearly the state has had a more dominant role because of the limit on local property taxes.
And that has meant what? That that Sacramento has more control, but also, I mean, the budget is immensely larger than it was back then. And there's a need to fund the programs that local governments used to be more responsible for.
Well, I think there's been a lot of things. Yes, the state has taken actions to provide local governments with money. For example, we passed Proposition 172, which gave a half-cent sales tax for criminal justice programs, and we sent that money down to the locals. Well, that was just one other step that we did in order to help them deal with the consequences of the passage of Prop 13. Local governments had to take a lot of different actions. They relied more on development fees. They relied more on fees in general. They looked to the taxes that they could increase, such as local utility taxes or hotel taxes. So they've had to take a lot of different steps to, in effect, react to what Prop 13 wrought.
So when people say California is one of the highest tax states in the country, and of course they're, you know, referring to the income tax as well, I suppose, and the sales tax. But, you know, all these other local taxes that you mentioned, I mean, to what extent is that because property taxes are relatively low due to Prop 13?
I think that's a very fair point. We do have people have to make sure they distinguish between state and local. We have fairly high state taxes. But our property tax rate is one of the lowest in the country. But you also have to realize that because our housing prices and our property prices are so much higher than the average of the rest of the country, the lower rate is offset in some to some extent by the fact that our property values are so high. But we still have, I would say, relatively moderate property taxes, and that does offset the higher state taxes.
And you also have, as part of the outcome of Prop 13, because property taxes for homeowners or commercial, which is a whole other issue, but they don't get reassessed until they sell. And so you have potentially two homes on the same block right next to each other. They could be identical homes with a longtime homeowner and a new, you know, home buyer. And the property taxes are very, very different.
Absolutely. And I think initially for people who particularly had concerns about tax policy, that was an issue of concern, that people who are in like situations, that is, they have the same property value, should pay roughly similar taxes. Now, you can argue that over time, those people might enjoy the benefits of Prop 13. If you stay in your home, you may be paying more taxes than your neighbor now, but if you stay in that home 10 years from now, you'll be less than your neighbor next door to you. So some of that might even out a little bit over time, but it's a very different situation, I think, for the non-residential properties.
We're going to let you go in just a moment, but I want to ask you, and I know you're nonpartisan, you're supposed to be just, you know, counting the dollars and being objective, but from where you sit, has Prop 13 been overall a good thing or a bad thing? What are the best arguments for it or against it?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone agree it's been a huge change. I think some people were concerned just about the loss of the revenues and how do you adjust to that. I think so that was a concern. I think for me, probably the biggest negative of 13 was this issue that I've talked about the state-local relationship. Property taxes are, in fact, a very good local tax source. When you raise monies, if you don't give people the benefits of what they're paying for, that can be reflected back in the property values. And it's a good local way of taxing. So I think for me, that's one big negative. But the biggest positive is that it's given lots of certainty to homeowners about when they do buy a home, they're going to know that those property taxes are not going to, they're not going to be volatile. They're not going to be raising or going up considerably in any given year. And that certainly helps in people's budgeting situations.
If, of course, you can afford the down payment, but that's another story.
Once you get into the house, though.
All right. Mac Taylor is legislative analyst for the state of California. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And let's broaden the conversation a bit. Joining us now is Susan Shelley. She's Vice President of Communications with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and also a columnist for Southern California News Group. Susan Shelley, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And also with me here in the studio is Henry Gardner. He is a former Oakland City manager, was around to implement Prop 13. He's also former executive director for the Association of Bay Area Governments, known as ABAG. Henry Gardner, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Let me begin with you, Susan Shelley. You've been listening to Mac Taylor describe sort of the pros and cons of Prop 13, the impact it's had on California revenues and homeowners and so on. What would you either add to what he said or dispute to what he had to say?
Well, the first thing I would add is that in 1971, the California Supreme Court issued a decision called Serrano versus Priest, which said that you can't use local property tax revenue to fund the schools because it's not equitable. And they said that you have to have per pupil spending that's equal across the districts, regardless of what the local property taxes are. And this is what really changed how the schools were funded, not Proposition 13, but everything being routed to Sacramento for the decisions to be made from there for the purposes of equity. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that property taxes are really different from other kinds of taxes because it's every year on something you own. It's not like a capital gains tax where you can decide when to sell. It's not like an income tax where the money is taxed once on the way in or a sales tax once on the way out. It's every year on something you own, whether you have the money or you don't, whether you have any income or you don't.
Well, but you're also getting the benefit. You're paying for, in a sense, services you're getting as a homeowner and the benefits of, police services, local services. I mean, it's not like, it's a penalty for something.
Well, that's true. But if you can't pay the property taxes, if it's going to be based on something that's completely out of your control, like the market value of your real estate, and it's going to be taxed at 2.6%, can anyone in California afford an annual payment of 2.6% of the market value of their house right now? And it's going to go up every year as the market value goes up. It's a completely uncontrollable expense. And the only option people have is to sell and leave. So property taxes are, in that sense, much more problematic in a growing economy where people are on sometimes fixed incomes as they get older and they're retired. It's a much more problematic type of revenue source than hotel taxes or utility taxes or anything else where people have some degree of control over it.
Henry Gardner, you were in Oakland when Prop 13 passed, assistant city manager at the time and then became city manager. What are some of the things Oakland dealt with as they had to implement Prop 13? And if you can, also speak to this point Susan just made about, the real impact on school funding wasn't Prop 13. It was this other Supreme Court ruling.
Before I comment on any of that, I want to comment on the repeated references to homeowners. Prop 13 also applied to commercial property, non-residential property. And this emphasis on homeowners and how homeowners have benefited conveniently ignores, in my opinion, the primary beneficiaries of Prop 13 have not been homeowners. They have been the non-residential property owners. Homes change hands much more frequently than non-residential property. And so we have many instances in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, in Oakland, and throughout the state, particularly in these metropolitan centers where you have a lot of non-residential property. The same owners who own those properties 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, many of them still own them. So I want to make that point.
At the time, we'll come back to that, by
yes,
the way.
And I want to make a lot of that. At the time Prop 13 passed, remember it passed in 1978, but it rolled back the taxes to 1976. There were two major impacts. Number one, not only were the taxes now restricted going forward from 1978, they were rolled back 2 years. So cities and counties and school districts at that point were really struggling trying to figure out how to make that up. The impacts on Oakland were huge. Oakland, and I think it was the LEO's office, that did a study that showed that Oakland and I think one other city were the hardest hit from Prop 13. Now, part of that is because these were older cities. They were heavily reliant on the property tax, and so they were the most affected. We laid off 1,000 employees out of 5,000 at the time. We closed 4 fire stations, 8 branch libraries, had no choice but to do those. And other major, major reductions. Many of these cities, the ones that were hardest hit, have never recovered from Prop 13. We have been successful in raising taxes in some areas, and we've been further restricted, and that's come mainly from the Jarvis Gann group, I should mention, in raising other kinds of taxes, utility consumption taxes, which were not subject to voter approval. There were a number of those, but those are very aggressive. And so the impacts were real. We're still seeing them. Infrastructure was greatly impacted, still is.
We're talking about Prop 13, which passed 40 years ago this year, restricting property taxes and property tax increases. Our guests, Susan Shelley, Vice President of Communications with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, and also Henry Garner, former Oakland City Manager, former Executive Director of the Association of Bay Area Governments. Susan Shelley, what about the point that Henry just made, that, of course, homeowners did benefit and do benefit from Prop 13, but really it was, and that's how it was sold to voters, but commercial properties, businesses, for-profits, businesses are also benefiting tremendously, you know, perhaps even more than homeowners.
Well, that's what the voters decided to do. In 1978, there was a second measure on the ballot, Proposition 8, I think it was, which would have done what he's suggesting, which is not give this tax treatment to commercial properties. And the voters rejected it, and they chose Proposition 13 for property taxes, the same treatment of all property, residential or commercial. And I would just like to point out that businesses don't directly pay taxes. It's paid by the customers of the business. It's paid in higher prices. It's paid in lower wages. It's paid in the burden that is on the business's bottom line. And I don't know that we really benefit in California if we raise taxes on businesses simultaneously across the whole state every year.
Although some would argue that, you know, it isn't the workers who are benefiting from lower property taxes. It's the owners and the shareholders of the businesses, and that they've found ways to really conceal the fact when property turns over, commercial property.
Well, that's something else. The definition of what is a change of ownership is something the legislature could fix, and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association has supported a fix for that. But the Democrats in the legislature actually are the ones who killed it and decided they'd rather have the issue.
What are your thoughts about schools? You said earlier that it really Prop 13 hasn't had an impact on school funding. It was that earlier state Supreme Court decision. Of course, many people would disagree with that. California was, I think, very near the top of per pupil spending when Prop 13 passed. It's now somewhere around 40th in the country. Are you saying that's unrelated to Prop 13?
Well, yes. And there was a study by the National Tax Association a couple of years ago that found that about half of the per pupil spending decline was from Serrano versus Priest, from the effect of that, and the rest was from extremely high enrollment increases in the 1980s. During the 1980s, public school enrollments rose 21% in California, and they fell 4% in the rest of the country on average. So that affected the averaging. But in general, Sacramento can spend the budget, which is at record levels every year. They can spend the budget on education if they choose to. This is a question of priorities. They can spend the money on law enforcement. They can spend the money on infrastructure. It's a question of priorities. And it's a question also of how much we're spending for public employee unions and benefits and pensions, and an enormous unfunded liability that is weighing on local governments much more than Prop 13 is.
Henry Gardner, what are your thoughts about the immediate impact on schools and today?
There is an impact on schools, and it comes from a variety of sources. Schools have the least ability of the major public agencies, cities and counties, to raise any other kind of revenues, taxes or otherwise. And our school funding is grossly inadequate. It's very difficult, in my opinion, with credibility to argue against that. Teachers are very underpaid. I was mortified to read just recently the pay for a school teacher in Oakland compared to Hayward and San Leandro. These school systems are dealing with huge challenges. Money will not solve all of the problems of public education, but you will not solve any of the big ones without it.
All right, let's read some comments from our listeners here. Joseph says, pegging property tax to purchase price likely means people stay in their homes longer. This constrains housing stock, which drives up property values, resulting in higher home prices and a greater barrier for entry for young people and families. Susan Shelley, would you agree that there has been a lack of turnover in homes because people can't afford really to buy a new home in the state and pay the new property tax based on market value?
Well, this brings up another question, which is why are we not building enough houses in California? And now you're into an entirely different topic about all the things that make it more expensive, more difficult, more delayed to do housing projects.
Although some people would say that Prop 13 is part of the reason for that, because local there's a disincentive to build housing because you can make more money from retail, building commercial property.
Well, I don't know that that's true, because the houses supposedly turn over more often than the commercial property. And you're talking really, I think, about adding sales tax revenue to the local government instead of just relying on property taxes. But in either case, people need houses, and we need to be building houses, and we need to be looking at what is stopping developers from building houses in California. And you have, we don't have to go into the whole list, but there are various environmental regulations and discouraging outlying developments in affordable areas because we don't want vehicle miles traveled because of the climate change agenda. There are a lot of things that have made California housing too expensive and out of reach of young families. And all of those problems need to be addressed. This is a supply and demand problem. Taxing people out of their own property won't solve that.
Henry Garner, it has been 40 years since Prop 13 passed. And, you know, couldn't you just make an argument that, hey, local governments, you know, deal with it? I mean, why haven't they been able to figure out, they've known what the rules of the road are in terms of property tax revenue? You know, why has it been so hard to adjust?
They've been able to figure it out. And the way they figured it out is they've reduced services. We have billions of dollars of underfunded infrastructure improvements throughout the state. Drive down the streets. And it's not because of neglect of the elected officials and neglect of the senior managers. The resources haven't been there to do it. And one of the ways we have dealt with it, we tend to address those things that the public can see. You can't see the sewers, so they get ignored for year after year. Oakland and San Francisco are still both living off of sewers that were built over 100 years ago. Now, it's not because they're just lazy or incompetent. There aren't the resources to do that. We do what we can. Drive down the streets of these older cities. It's not that the mayor and the council members think that it's just fine, that there are potholes all over the place. We passed a measure, I think a couple of years ago, to deal with street repavement. When Prop 13 passed, Oakland was repaving its streets every 30 years. We've gotten finally to about every 75 years now.
So a big change there. And then real quickly, and we'll come back to this, Henry Garner, just a few seconds before we take a break. But, you know, Prop 13 also changed the threshold for passing tax increases in Sacramento.
Indeed,
and
it did.
Yeah, and that has had an
And that was impact. A Jarvis Gann initiative as well, incidentally.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to continue the impact on Prop 13. We'd love to hear from you if you're a homeowner or someone wanting to get into the market, finding it difficult for whatever set of reasons. And we can talk about how Prop 13 has affected that. We're going to be joined by another guest, Matt Levin from CalMatters, who has a podcast on housing issues, covers housing issues for CalMatters. So we have lots more to talk about, and we want to hear from you, of course. 866-733-6786 is the number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions and comments. It's forum@kqed.org, or if you prefer, you can tweet us. It's @KQEDForum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Prop 13, 40 years later, is our focus. Welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. And for the rest of this hour, we're talking about the legacy of Proposition 13. It passed in 1978 overwhelmingly and rolled back property taxes, capped annual increases on property taxes, and has had a lot of impact on California and local government as well. We're talking to Susan Shelley, Vice President of Communications for the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. They were, of course, one of the prime backers of Prop 13 40 years ago. And Henry Garner is former Executive Director of ABAG, former city manager for Oakland. He was there when Prop 13 was implemented. And joining us now, Matt Levin, who is a data and housing reporter for CalMatters. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Let me begin. I assume you've been listening to all or part of this conversation. And from where you sit as somebody who covers housing, what are your thoughts about how Prop 13 has affected both the cost of housing, the amount of housing, that kind of thing?
Sure. So I think Prop 13 has it's often held up as a bogeyman for everything that's wrong with California's housing market. And that is not true. Right. Prop 13 is not the only reason why we have such a severe housing shortage in California. But I think most housing experts and housing economists would say that, yes, in terms of a constraint on supply of housing in California, which we desperately need more housing, Prop 13 has played a prominent role.
How?
So in a few ways, the kind of classic example is this nerdy term called the fiscalization of land use. But to make that slightly less nerdy. So if you're a city and you have a vacant piece of land and you're deciding what to put on that vacant piece of land, and you're deciding between, let's say, a Target and a desperately needed apartment building, your fiscal incentives, you know, what's going to get you more money in your city coffers, that Target or maybe a hotel is going to be much more beneficial to your finances than an apartment building. And that's partly because of Prop 13. If you put a cap on property taxes, you're going to get less revenue into city coffers to pay for much needed services that inhabitants of that apartment building are going to need regardless. So this is something that is kind of a little bit more theory than empirically proven phenomenon. But if you talk to city managers, especially in the suburbs, this is a real thing. And it's an issue in terms of what cities approve for new development, whether they go more commercial or whether they go more residential.
This is maybe a little far afield, but
sure.
You know, we Prop 13 has this widespread impact, and yet there is, you know, there's never really been a serious effort to reform it. Although on Prop 5 on the ballot just this past November was a measure that would have basically expanded Prop 13 and given homeowners the right to basically take those property tax benefits with them to a new home in a different county in California. And it failed overwhelmingly. What do you read from that?
So a couple of things, just kind of practically and politically. The main sponsor of that initiative, the California Association of Realtors, didn't really put a ton of money and mobilization around it. That's partly because they're going to come back with the same initiative in 2020 with a couple tweaks that might make it a little more palatable to voters. But I do think it's noteworthy that a Prop 13 expansion failed, and as you mentioned, failed so overwhelmingly, you know, almost around 20 points, I think, statewide, because in previous attempts to expand Prop 13 on the statewide ballot have worked. An initiative that basically lets children inherit their parents' property, Prop 13 tax breaks, passed fairly convincingly a couple decades back. So it is notable in that regard if you're looking for a sign of maybe some of the public attitudes on Prop 13 are changing.
All right. That's Matt Levin from Cal Matters. He's with us for the rest of this hour, along with Susan Shelley from the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and Henry Gardner, former Oakland City Manager and former Executive Director of ABAG as well. Lots of people want to join us, so let's get to it. Mike in San Carlos, you're first. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've got a couple comments regarding, you know, property taxes. Yeah, I pay taxes already on my income, and then they want to tax my income that's left over on my property. And as a homeowner, to pay property taxes, I'm not making any money off of the property other than if it goes up in value. But I just don't think there should be property taxes at all for someone who lives in their home and they're a homeowner. It's double taxation. You know, we got the California lottery. It was supposed to contribute. And I don't know where all that money's going, but, you know, commercial property taxes or rental income, I can understand collecting taxes on those properties. But if you're just living in your home, you pay it off after 30 years and you retire, and then you've still got to pay property taxes. That's just not fair.
How long have you been a homeowner, Mike?
About 6 years.
Oh, 6 years. So relatively new.
Yeah.
But I assume that the value has gone up. You've got some equity, perhaps?
Well, yeah, but I mean, eventually I'm going to retire, and if they reassess the house, you know, if I get reassessed, I have to pay more property taxes because, you know, thank God the assessment has stayed down to what I originally paid. But if the price keeps going up and then they reassess it, I retire, I don't have an income. And then I've got to pay property taxes for something that I've already paid on for 30 years. It's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not fair. I don't agree with it. Any property tax for a, okay. Just a homeowner.
All right, Mike, know? I think we got the point. Matt Levin, you know, Mike's making his point, but we mm-hmm. should just say, I believe every state has property taxes. It's certainly not just California. What it is, though, Prop 13 does affect sort of the mix of sources of revenue, right?
Yeah, that's right. So cities increasingly relied on non-property tax revenue in the wake of Prop 13. So what does that mean exactly? That means sales taxes, hotel taxes, other forms of taxes that aren't related to the value of a property. And I think, you know, you hear some of the passion in Mike's voice. He is not alone. And I think something that often gets lost in the discussion of Prop 13 is you are taxing a non-liquid asset, right? You know, even if the value of your home does go up, you know, 30%, 50%, you know, 100% in some instances, it's not as if people can easily access that that value appreciation to pay their property tax bill. So there's a legitimate point there.
Yeah. Susan Shelley, you had mentioned earlier that your organization was open to, I forget the exact word you used, whether it was fixing or changing how Prop 13 affects commercial property. But wouldn't, under California's system, wouldn't that have to go back to the voters? I mean, the legislature can't do that alone.
Yes, they can. It's the definition of a change of ownership, and that is a statute. That's legislative language. That's not part of Prop 13. Prop 13 says that property is reassessed on a change of ownership, but the definition of a change of ownership when there are multiple partners is set by the legislature.
And how does your organization support changing that?
You know, I don't have that information right in front of me, but there was a bill that was introduced that we did support that changed something related to when it's 50% or what the exact percentage is of each owner. And I apologize for not having it in front of me.
Matt Levin, do you happen to know?
I don't know the specific legislation, but there has been a bill. There's been multiple bills that have attempted to do that. It's also part of this 2020 initiative, this split roll initiative that's going to be on the ballot. Or could be on the ballot, I should say.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. But to hear some comments from listeners, John says, as a new homeowner in Berkeley, I pay about 500% more in property taxes than my five neighbors to offset the cost. We have a renter downstairs. Our neighbors have no incentive to rent any of their considerable available space. Ryan writes, Prop 13 is insanely unfair to renters. Basically, we have tax control for affluent homeowners, but no rent control for affluent renters. Landlords are also able to raise rent, even though their tax bill doesn't go up. So obviously strong feelings there on both sides. And let's go to the phones and see what Michael in Burlingame has to say. Hi, Michael.
Thank you. This is a great program, great topic. I was on the school board for 16 years. I had a chance to dig into this. You know, Serrano versus Priest is brought up. Prop 13 actually made it worse because the wealthy areas ended up passing parcel taxes to compensate for the lost revenue, and the unwealthy or the lower wealth districts can't get those taxes passed. So the concept of Prop 13 is laudable, and as a homeowner for 20-odd years, I love it from that perspective, but there are a lot of nuances that people don't understand that have tied everything in the knots. And it's made it very difficult for local jurisdictions. I could go on, but I appreciate the panel here. But there needs to be some fixes to Prop 13.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Let me just put that to you, Henry Gardner, that sort of disproportionate impact of Prop 13 and how some of the wealthier parts of California were able to adjust by raising other taxes and fees. I mean, did you see that in Oakland?
Well, I think that point is right. I'm not an educator. I do not come from a public sector educational background as a teacher, administrator, anything else. But I'm a resident of Oakland, and I care very much what happens to these public schools throughout the state. The part about Serrano Priest that, in my opinion, misses a big piece of the problem, the per pupil funding does not account for the fact that, and I'm going to continue to mention Oakland and Berkeley and San Francisco because I'm most knowledgeable about those, but most of the urban schools, particularly older ones, they have old buildings that have to be maintained. That doesn't address that. You also, they're paid on what's called the ADA basis, average daily attendance. in the more urban areas where you're dealing with a lot of challenges and getting kids to school regularly, the urban schools are disproportionately impacted by that formula. And then to the last point, wealthy communities can give directly. They do fundraisers. They can buy computers. All that kind of, those kinds of things. Most of these public schools in these more urban areas can't do that. And then I do want to go back, if I might quickly, to a point that Shelley made, and I want Susan Shelley to know, not all of the problems in California have anything to do with Prop 13. I think there's some big pieces of it, but not all of them. And I really agree with most of what she said about housing. Where we have not built, that is a fundamental problem.
Yeah, and Matt Levin, of course, that is something you've written about a lot. And there are a lot of reasons for California's housing shortage, and some of them are trying to be addressed, or legislators are trying to address them through bills that some of whom, which didn't make it through the legislature last year, Scott Wiener's bill, for example, to increase density around transit areas. How hopeful are you that under a new governor there might be, say, more incentive, more interest in doing even more to, you know, compel or encourage housing construction?
I think you're going to see a flurry of action probably within Newsom's first year on trying to spur more housing development. But as bills being talked about and bills being passed, even if there is some kind of enormous shift in housing legislation, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're immediately going to see a huge boom in construction and then consequently prices fall anytime in the near term, right? This is a problem that has been building for 50 years, and it's going to take a long time to dig ourselves out of it.
And of course, as Jerry Brown himself said this week, he doesn't blame people for not wanting more density where they live.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, he has signed a lot of legislation on housing, but some have felt that he, and I think he has said, he doesn't really feel the government is a solution to the housing problem. Gavin Newsom may feel differently. Let's go back to the phones, and Kelly in Berkeley, you're next.
Hi. Being in Berkeley, in my little bit of knowledge of my area, I can identify six homes that are sitting vacant because parents have been allowed to give their homes to their children, and the children then can maintain or keep the tax assessment. And so these kids don't do anything with the houses. They may look at come and stay once or twice a week. And this is a great place to start in adjusting Prop 13. There should, if a house changes hands, it has to go up and be reassessed. Children should not be allowed to inherit their parents' home and keep the tax base assessment.
Although, Susan Shelley, that is what voters voted for, right?
That is what voters voted for, and it was the legislature that put that on the ballot. It wasn't an initiative. It was the legislature by overwhelming vote, and then it passed by 75%, I think it was, back in the 1986, I think it was.
Yeah.
Prop 58.
All right. Kelly, thanks for the call. Let's go now to Sunnyvale. Mark, you're next.
Hi there. One thing I'd like to underline is that property taxes are not only a good source of revenue, but they also can be used to basically make sure that people aren't hoarding a scarce resource such as land. And in fact, you know, economists across the spectrum from Stiglitz to Milton Friedman have said that, you know, land taxes are in fact the best form of taxes to prevent real estate speculation. But, you know, California, Prop 13 makes that illegal. So in a lot of ways, there's an economic consensus that Prop 13 is perhaps one of the very worst policies we could have to prevent a housing crisis.
Matt Levin, you spoke to that a little bit earlier.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
it's easy to blame too much of the problems with housing, though, on Prop 13.
Yes. I mean, there, as both Henry and Susan have mentioned, there are multiple failures of state and local law that have led to our housing shortage. So, you know, abuses of the California Environmental Quality Act. There's some factors that are somewhat, you know, external to what lawmakers can do, like rising construction costs, right? Prop 13, I think most people would agree, or at least housing experts would agree, has been in some ways a constraint on supply. And one of the points that one of the previous callers made about vacant properties or vacant lots, Prop 13 plays a factor in that, too, not just inherited tax breaks, but If you drive around certain communities in the Bay Area and you see a bunch of vacant lots, right, and you go, how is no one building on this? This land must be worth so, so much. And part of the answer to that is, well, property taxes on those vacant pieces of land aren't rising with the value because of Prop 13. So the cost to the owner of keeping that land vacant doesn't rise in unison with the value of the land.
Susan Shelley, is that a tweak to Prop 13 that you might support, sort of addressing what Matt just described?
I don't think so. If people are not building on the land, we should ask, why are they not building on the land? Is someone preventing them from building on the land because they can't get permits or they can't get approval? And perhaps they would like to build on the land, and the government itself is stopping that.
You don't think Prop 13 and the lower property taxes don't have anything to do with that?
I don't think so, no. And I'd like to correct one other thing. The Legislative Analyst's Office said that since Prop 13 passed, residential construction grew by 60%, and commercial construction grew by less than 30%. And this was from a 2016 report, Common Claims About Prop 13. So it's really not true that the fiscalization has prevented residential construction from being approved. It's grown faster than commercial construction.
All right, let's read some listener comments here. Paul says, a discussion of Prop 13 should mention that there was a massive increase in property taxes from 1973 to 78. Property values in places like Berkeley quadrupled, and homeowners on fixed incomes were forced to sell their homes. We did talk about that a bit with Mac Taylor. Stephen Schmidt writes, the fundamental law that created the need for Prop 13 is the unnecessary link between property tax and the assessed value of property. Formulas could be devised based on square footage, land use zoning, etc. And Wendy says a residential property where the owner lives in the property should retain Prop 13. Anyone else who rents property at a profit or who Airbnbs their property should not have the benefits of Prop 13. All right, let's go back to the phones. A lot of people want to weigh in here. And Greg in Woodside, what's on your mind?
Good morning. I just want to say, you know, coming from the East Coast, Prop 13 is a godsend. You know, when you have get older and you have a fixed income, not having to pay current market value for your home is just incredible. But I also think that it needs to be rewritten so that it doesn't include people's investment properties or inheritance. There's no reason why the public should be subsidizing people's investments or inheritance.
Matt Levin, to what extent do you think, there have been criticisms of platforms like Airbnb or VRBO that sort of pervert the housing market in one way or another. If Prop 13, let's suppose there were some grand bargain in the state legislature to put something on the ballot reforming some of these things. I mean, to what extent do you think issues like Airbnb or out of the country ownership of properties as an investment that go, you know, left vacant? I mean, to what extent should things like that or could things like that be part of that negotiation?
There's lots of kind of third rail aspects of Prop 13. One of the third railiest aspects is how you treat apartment buildings or investment properties, things that aren't kind of naturally commercial properties but might be in that little bit of a gray area. It could definitely be part of some type of grand tax compromise, which is something that Governor-elect Newsom has said that he wants to go after. Good luck. It's going to be a very, very tough battle for him. But that's something that would be very difficult to kind of get done in the legislature, although not to preclude the possibility entirely.
Third railiest. I like that.
Yes.
Have you used that before?
I haven't. I just improvised that.
Okay, so you copyright it.
Yes.
Henry Gardner, from where you sit and what you know about local finances, what if you could change one thing about Prop 13, large or small, what would it be?
I would support the split roll tax, as I said at the beginning.
Take commercial property out of it.
Yes. I think they should be reassessed periodically whether or not they change hands or not. These are investments no matter how you look at it. Residential property, I would leave it right where it is, whether it's a multi-story building or a single-family house that's being rented. I do want to just quickly go back to the origins of Prop 13 so that my comments are understood. There was a compelling need to do something about these rising property taxes. And as one of your callers mentioned, taxes were going up 10-15% a year. And people were saying, I'm being taxed out of my home. That was real.
Especially people on fixed income.
Absolutely. Well, especially those, but it was for everybody. To get a tax bill, just think of it today. If your tax bill went up 10% over last year, people would be screaming bloody murder. And I just think that the legislature did too little too late to deal with that problem. It was in front of us. It was looming. And that's the reason Prop 13 passed.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And Alan in Burlingame. Welcome.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is I think that Prop 13 is like hugely inequitable. It's essentially a transfer of wealth that is regressive from the wealthier, more established people who had the good fortune of buying years ago versus new families who just bought recently. So I had the misfortune of having to buy in 2014, and I'm paying 15 to 20 times, property tax relative to people who are in my same town. 20% of the houses in Burlingame are assessed at, like, you know, $200,000, which is 1980 property value assessment. It's hugely, kind of debilitating in terms of paying that level of property tax, and you kind of have to live paycheck to paycheck is what you have to do to afford a house in Burlingame. And the inequity also manifests in special assessments when we pass measures to fund community colleges, and in Burlingame, a new rec center, which are resources that everybody arguably enjoys, we're paying many-fold higher. So to make the system more equitable, I think it should be based upon your income and ability to pay. There's no reason that people who are wealthy living in Atherton or Hillsborough are paying, $2,000 a year while we're paying close to 40.
I think ability to pay is a whole different issue, Alan. But the other one you raised is good. And Susan Shelley, I'm wondering, what does your organization think of that inequity that Alan describes? Of, you know, people living right next door to each other paying vastly different property taxes.
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1992 that this is equitable. That the
think? I'm saying, what does your organization think?
Well, we think it's equitable because everyone has the same opportunity to have certainty about their property taxes at the time that they buy property. And it's certainly true that property is wildly expensive in California. This gets back to the supply and demand problem again. And I certainly agree that people who are buying homes now are paying too much. I would rather see the rate cut from where it is today than look at raising everyone else's taxes. Don't forget that people who are using their property for rental income are paying income taxes, which are the highest in the country.
Although that's in part, is it not, because property taxes are relatively low?
Well, I don't know. Other states manage to do it. Other states have roads and schools and sewers, and they manage to run their cities. They have police. They have sheriffs. They manage to do it on lower taxes than Californians are paying. I think we have a problem in Sacramento where we have a government that is not doing a good job.
Henry?
Well, I think that's all well and good, but let's not ignore the fact that independent of housing costs, the cost of living in California, take housing out of it, is much higher than almost any other state. And people have to earn a livable wage in order to live here. One of our biggest problems is that this is a wonderful place to live, and a lot of people want to live here.
A lot of coastline, pretty good weather. I can certainly see that. Matt Levin, 40 years later, Prop 13 is still pretty popular with voters, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So this is also important in terms of future prospects for perhaps changing it or reforming it or however you want to view possible changes to Prop 13. But in 1978, Prop 13 passed with 65% of the vote. And the Public Policy Institute of California, a nonpartisan policy and polling organization, recently asked California voters, hey, do you think Prop 13 is working out? And 65% said yes, the exact same percentage that actually voted for the measure in 1978. And that is despite some of the massive demographic changes we've seen within the state and less homeowners being in the electorate than there used to be. So it is still very popular, although when you break it down to some of the individual components of Prop 13, those, the polling suggests, are less popular among Californians.
Let's see if we can squeeze a couple more comments here from listeners. Carol says, to say that Prop 13 is not the root cause of the decline of our schools is just wrong. I lived through it and saw it. Roeder writes, my biggest difficulty with Prop 13 is that it unfairly reduces the value of my vote. Since it takes supermajorities to increase local taxes now, it takes 2 yes votes to counter 1 no vote. And then Rich writes, on what basis did the U.S. Supreme Court reject a challenge to Prop 13? I think, Susan, that was the case you referred to. I think that was back in the early 90s, wasn't it?
It's 1992. The case is Nordlinger versus Hahn, and you can look it up. There won't be time for me to talk about it here.
Okay. Just about a minute left, Matt. What are you looking for this session of the legislature? We have a new governor coming in terms of, you know, Prop 13 potentially, and we mentioned there's a ballot measure in 2020 to peel off commercial property. But, you know, what are you going to be looking for in terms of real movement in the legislature this session?
Sure. So Governor-elect Newsom, as I mentioned before, has lightly touched, I'd say, this third rail. He has talked about the quote-unquote fiscalization of land use as one of those things that he wants to try to correct. So if he does end up pushing some type of broader tax reform plan, you can expect those conversations to happen in the Capitol. On the 2020 split roll note, you know, the forces behind that definitely want a deal in the legislature. They want something to come out before they have to go to the 2020 ballot.
All right. Matt Levin, thanks for joining us with Cal Matters. Thanks also to Henry Gardner, former city manager for Oakland, Susan Shelley with the Jarvis Taxpayers Association, and Mac Taylor, the legislative analyst, earlier in the hour. Thanks to all of you very much for joining us. You might want to tune in tomorrow to the California Report magazine to hear how Prop 13 has affected neighbors who live on one block in North Oakland. That's tomorrow here on KQED at 4:30 and 6:30 and other times throughout California as well. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. I'll be back tomorrow for Mina Kim. Thanks for joining us and have a great day.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.